Well, hi there. You're watching and or listening to Podcast is Broken, a weekly podcast in which we try to make Canadian news and politics funner. My name is Brittlestar.
My name is Steve Boots, and I think it's more fun.
My name is Lisa, and I think it's prorogorific.
What?
Prorogorific.
That was fantastic. We have a special guest. Guest, can you introduce yourself, please?
I guess that would be me. Elizabeth May, honored, deeply honored to join Podcast is Broken. It may be the honor of my life. I'm the leader of the Green Party of Canada, and I'm also the member of Parliament for Saanich Gulf Islands, speaking to you live from the center of the universe, Sydney, British Columbia, at the very southern tip of Vancouver Island.
Well, it's a treat to have you here.
Trump, I got to tell Donald Trump, take this, Trump. I am south of the 49th parallel. I look due east out my window at Mount Baker in Washington State. It's ours.
So you can just reach out and grab it.
Yeah.
And there's a
Heyo.
They're coming home to mama.
May has the invasion ready, folks. You hear it here first.
It's the counter invasion.
I've had imperial aspirations for a long time, but nowhere to put them.
Well, it's nice to have an outlet. That's the key.
The mask is finally off.
Exactly.
Megalomaniacal.
So the news has been a bit busy of late, thanks to the incoming U.S. president, and that's just one of the many issues. Of course, we're still grappling with the whole foreign interference report, which is going to be coming out shortly, and some people have decided not to get national security clearance still, which is just weird, isn't it?
Some
individuals who may or may not be named.
Exactly. But we are so excited to have you here, Elizabeth, because you have become a Fox News darling.
Even Elon Musk attacked me. I'm so...
Did he really?
What a badge of honor.
Everybody thinks he said it to Trudeau, but it was in response to me. Oh. Elon Musk put out there, hey, girl, you're not even governor anymore.
Oh.
I didn't even know I wasn't governor anymore. So it was.
We learn new things every day, right?
We do.
Especially on Twitter.
Exactly. Yeah.
Small chance of what we learn on Twitter could actually be true.
Now that
Mark Zuckerberg has removed the fact checkers on Meta. Formerly Facebook, formerly whatever. Who knows? I the things that are true are the things that are hard. Oh God, how do we?
Well, that's a big issue with Zuckerberg removing the fact checkers. I think I read earlier today that it was just in the U.S. so far, but that may be global. I'm not sure, but I think that this means that we won't be able to tell if someone's hot or not anymore. They could be hot.
Can
they might
still
not be
poke
hot.
Them? I haven't been on Facebook in a while.
You can't prove a poke anymore. That's the thing. But anyway, so it's exciting times, and there's certainly lots to talk about. Where should we start? Steve, Lisa, where would you like to start?
Oh, I would really love to ask you a couple of questions about Justin Trudeau's resignation.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yes. Obviously you, Brittleman.
We've got Elizabeth here.
Okay. It sounded like, and I don't pretend to know, but it sounded like when you spoke about him that you had a pretty extensive sort of personal relationship with him. And so I'm really curious how you think this whole saga, how did it play out as somebody who maybe knows him a little more personally? Like, did it seem different from your end as somebody who was closer to it than the public may have interpreted it? What did you see?
I don't know. First of all, I want to be real clear. I'm pretty close to all of my colleagues in Parliament. I reminded Pierre Poilievre the other day that I'd kind of been with them on their first date. He was a bit surprised I remembered, but I've known these guys and gals, the people of various pronouns. I've known them all a long time. I've known them, but I've been there not longer. Obviously, Pierre Poilievre got elected in 2004. I got elected in 2011, but I knew him in 2004 because back in those days, before I joined a political party, I was executive director of a national environmental group, and I had to know all the MPs and I tried to meet all the party leaders regularly to chat with them and chat up policy ideas that, might prolong survival of civilization, those kinds of controversial topics. So I got to know, I know everybody. So I'd have known Justin Trudeau from before either of us were elected. And when I was first elected, which was May 2nd, 2011, he'd already been MP for Papineau for a bit, but I'd known him from before. It's too complicated, but I'd known him from before. Actually, fun factoid, my late sister-in-law was his stepmom for a while. So,
right.
Oh, wow.
Right?
Wow.
Right? So it was funny, when I wanted to tell Justin, because I like people a lot, and I like not making it all about politics all the time. So when we're milling about waiting for a vote, I found my moment to, you know, go across the floor. We're waiting for a vote. Nothing's happening. And I said, Justin, I just wanted to tell you something kind of fun. And it's just that I have a new boyfriend and I'm really excited and he's really great. And actually, we were already engaged, but John had told me not to tell anyone yet. Mm-hmm. So I ran across the floor and I said, I'm really happy. And my new guy is John Kidder. And you remember he was Marco's brother. And Justin went completely mushy in a way that really was sweet. And he said, God, I love Marco. I miss her. I think of her a lot. We had great times. And Carla Quattro, who is also a cabinet minister, was standing with Justin. And she said, what are you guys talking about? I said, it's nothing. It's just that my new boyfriend is the older brother of Justin's dad's old girlfriend. And she said, that's really weird. And Justin said, no, it's a small country, which is the thing. That is the thing. That's why I was with Pierre and Anand on their first date, right? These things happen in a small country. So anyway, I've known Justin a long time. So what I saw going down, I felt, number one, it was inevitable, as I described it. I mean, I tried to be, you know, reflective and kind. Mm-hmm. But it was obvious that he had to resign. He probably should have resigned a lot sooner. But when people would ask me what I thought about it, I'd say, well, it's the change of the leadership of the Liberal Party. What's it got to do with me? I'm leader, co-leader of the Green Party of Canada. I'm not worried. I mean, it's not my business how well the Liberals do in the next election. That's their business. So it was obvious, though, especially since the stunning resignation of Chrystia Freeland that nobody saw coming. That was an insane day in Parliament. I've never seen anything as surrealistic as the Speaker of the House trying to cope with pausing proceedings to allow the tabling of the fall economic statement. And you kind of had to be there. But I think on TV, you couldn't even see it. We're all looking at the front benches of the Liberal area, which is where the cabinet ministers sit. And there's nobody there, right? Like it's empty. And so the speaker's standing there saying, pursuant to an order passed on, I think it was January. Well, he was standing there December 16th. I think a motion had been passed. It'd be December 12th or 13th. He's saying, pursuant to a motion carried unanimously, I am now being at 4 p.m. He was stalling for time. 4 p.m. December 16th, I pause proceedings to permit the Minister of Finance. He's going more slowly now because there's nobody. We're all looking up and down the benches to present the fall economic statement. And all of the speaking time for each of us, Pierre Poilievre, then Yves-François Blanchet, then Jagmeet Singh, then me, we're each pre-allocated an equivalent amount of time to respond as the Minister of Finance takes to deliver her speech on the fall economic statement. So she's resigned at 9:07 a.m. It's now 4 p.m. A bunch of us have had access to read the fall economic statement, embargoed in what are called the lockup rooms. And this is all unfolding in real time and no one knows what the hell to do. And Ed Pierre Poilievre, it was his funniest moment in the House, genuinely. He said, question for the Minister of Finance, who are you?
Don't humanize him like that, Elizabeth.
I know. It's the worst when he's funny. It was weird, right? And then Pierre Poilievre, then they start getting huffy and saying, well, the Speaker must command or, you know, compel the Minister of Finance to show up and present the fall economic statement. And of course, Greg Fergus, as Speaker, saying, this is the wording of the order I have. I am to pause the proceedings to permit the Minister of Finance to present the full economic statement. If there's no one here to present. I can't compel. I have the limits on what I have here is what I have. You know, however, he stated it more elegantly than that. At which point I rose on a point of order, and because everybody was completely kerfuffled and there's nobody there. And it was, I have said, it was kind of like that moment in Ferris Bueller's Day Off with the awful teacher. Was saying, anyone, Bueller, nobody.
Is there a minister of finance in the house?
Anybody. So at that point, I stood up and suggested that unless the we have a lot of procedural officers. They're actually technically called the table officers because they sit at the table. In front of the speaker's chair is, believe it or not, there's a chair and then there's a table. But these are official protocol names. So the table officers have on the table that juts out from in front of the speaker into the benches, they have volumes of actual hardcover green bound volumes of precedents. They also have their computer screens. And they're supposed to advise the speaker on what the rules are because the speaker doesn't know everything out of his own head. So at that point, I suggest to the speaker that unless the protocol officers, the table officers, have in front of them a volume of precedents that was written by Lewis Carroll, it's unlikely they can find anything to guide us at this moment. So at which point the speaker said, I see the Honorable Government House Leader is it, thank you. God. So here comes Karina Gould, the government leader in the House. She rushes to the very edge of the front of the benches and doesn't rise to speak, except to say, I now have the honor of presenting in both official languages the fall economic statement. She kind of thrusts them into the hands of a table officer and runs from the room. So it doesn't get more dramatic than that. And then that was, so again, how did it feel to your question, Steve, about knowing Justin Trudeau better? I was, this whole thing, I mean, a debacle of the first order. And of course, with Chrystia Freeland not delivering the fall economic statement and doing at not, we're talking about technological difficulties and people my age, and I was thinking, how did she pull that off? How did she get her resignation letter up on social media at 9:07 without a single person knowing it was about to happen? Personally, I think her teenagers helped her because she could not have asked a single person on her staff team because they're all infiltrated by PMO people knowing everything that happens.
Sure.
Which we found out from Jody Wilson-Raybould's book, that Indian at the Cabinet Table. Jody recounted the story of she and Jane Philpott, who was then Minister of Health, and Ralph Goodale wanted to talk privately and did manage to, just the three of them as senior cabinet ministers, speak to each other. And they got in trouble because they hadn't brought their chiefs of staff with them because the chiefs of staff to cabinet ministers are appointed by the prime minister's office and report back. So it's gotten so bad that the power of a prime minister's office has gotten so out of hand. I thought Justin Trudeau was going to reduce the power of PMO. I remember him saying so in his one-on-one with Peter Mansbridge. And like many of the things Justin Trudeau has said, I've lived to regret believing him. But I thought it was kind of like a, almost like a Darth Vader full circle father-son thing that was going to happen, that Justin Trudeau would reduce the powers of the prime minister's office. Because essentially, capital P, capital M, capital O, was an invention of Pierre Trudeau. It's not constitutional. We don't have to have it. We should cut its budget to zip. And that would be brilliant for Parliament. But anyway, so it was obvious that at the point that Chrystia Freeland managed to resign from cabinet while expressing her loyalty to the Liberal Party and leaving them in this complete chaos, I've never seen so many people who are bright and capable and have loads of resources at their fingertips, so caught off guard, so unable to pull it together, so unsure of what the hell happens next, as watching that moment where the Speaker of the House says, we're pausing for the tabling of the fall economic statement. So when Justin finally said he was resigning on January 6th, nobody was surprised. But I did feel as though, I mean, I was torn between still, and as I said in my statement, I'm still real angry at him for many things of broken promises. But that doesn't mean I don't care about him. And this had to be hell. And what he says he told his kids at dinner, I know how hard he's worked to protect his kids. I know sure. how much it matters to him to be a good dad, because if anybody knows what it's like to be the son of a prime minister and living in a goldfish bowl, it's someone who's been the son of a prime minister living in a goldfish bowl. And I just, there's a part of me that always will care, I hope, despite whatever political differences we have. As a human being, I care about Justin and I care about his three kids. And I felt like it was one of the crummiest things that's ever happened in Canadian politics was for someone at a snowboarding vacation location in British mm-hmm. Columbia mm-hmm. to yell at him in front of, I mean, Hadrian's only, I think Hadrian's, if he's nine, that's as old as he is, he's youngest. Mm-hmm. It's like, you don't go on a vacation. That wasn't a high-end elite island vacation. You can see why he might want to take high-end elite mm-hmm. island vacations. So people can't just walk up to him and call him out with an F. Trudeau flag in their hands or whatever. Mm-hmm. I mean, this isn't fun for people. And I wanted to reflect on that. But I also think, you know, I'm not defending his record, but you do have to thank someone for giving up so much of your personal life to try to be of service to your country. Whether, you know, whether most Canadians want to thank him, I understand. But it's hard and it isn't fun a lot of the time.
I would love to take it back one second to the Freeland resignation. What do you think her chess move was there? Like, what do you, like, there's obviously a strategic play here, but from the outside, it kind of looks like she just sort of like dropped a grenade and then hasn't really done much in the public eye since.
Well, I mean, it was very clear as it unfolded, because it was clear in her letter of resignation that on Friday, the prime minister had told her that she would no longer be finance minister. And on Monday morning, she's gone without a hint to anyone in the Liberal establishment and without any expectation from anyone on the opposition benches either. So the way she worded her letter, I saw it as, didn't see it immediately, but the more I thought about it, I'm like, oh, she's going to run for Liberal leadership, because this is the final nail in the coffin of the idea that Justin Trudeau can lead the Liberal Party into the next election. Sure. Mm-hmm. He was hanging on to that and hanging on to that. And up to a point, some people could believe he could do it. I mean, he's a very energetic campaigner. I think he was kind of believing things that were not believable in terms of his own ability to win back people who were, as I said, we've never had in politics the disrespect that lets people feel like it's okay to have, like, in parking lots and grocery stores in my area here, where people are, I'd say the constituents are really, really, really lovely people here. Mm-hmm. When I see an expensive decal on a car at my local grocery store that says F-U-C-K Trudeau, I think, wow, they're really, people hate him. It's really attached to him personally in a big way. So he wasn't seeing the handwriting on the wall, but it was clear from the way Chrystia Freeland made it clear. I was being told on Friday that I was not going to be Minister of Finance once I finished reading the full economic statement on Monday. So I think her move was, her play was, ultimately, the coup de grace, right? Trudeau's done now. Chrystia Freeland is not only gone, she's gone from cabinet, she's gone from finance minister, and she's saying, I'm loyal to the Liberal Party, I'm running again.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll find out in the next day or two, I suppose, mm-hmm. running for leader, I think almost for sure, right?
What, you didn't see her many phones and many teas? The strangest tweet.
Yeah. I just think, like, how did she pull that off? I never knew she had a mafiosa streak, but that's a mafia move.
Right?
And I'm very fond of all these people. Chrystia Freeland, and I like one of the things I love about Chrystia is when we get together for meetings, which isn't that often, she'll always stop and say, first, let's be humans. How's your family? What's going on? how you feeling? What's, you know, like, I appreciate that about people I work with in politics is when you can stop and say, yeah, before we get into all the things we're going to fight over, how are things going? Yeah, a human moment really counts for a lot. And I feel, you know, like for all of, I mean, I genuinely do. I work at it. Some are harder to love than others, but I really do love all the other MPs in Parliament, because otherwise how can you function, right? Like, this is just, Canada's a small country, but also Parliament, like 300 people. It's the smallest village ever. And we're in and out of each other's bathwater. You're not going to be at least decent to each other. What kind of life is that?
Is it still the majority, do you think, of parliamentarians who are there? You feel that way? Like, and just the general vibe is still very much a, we're working for the same common goal of making Canada better in general for all? Or is it soured?
The vibe is depending on the day. Pretty toxic, right? Yeah. But if you, what I like to tell constituents, because it's so easy to start believing the kind of the rage farming algorithms, that these people who should be, they're traitors to Canada. They should be drawn and quartered. I mean, the kind of nasty stuff we get over social media, particularly to women politicians. What I end up thinking is, it's important to let, when I'm talking to constituents at community meetings or on media, for heaven's sakes, really, honestly, if my car broke down on a, you know, a scary place on a dark road, there's nobody in Parliament I wouldn't call, none of my other MP friends would I not call, right through Pierre Poilievre, Jagmeet Singh, Yves François Blanchet, whatever, say, I'm stuck, can you come? There's nobody I wouldn't trust with my life.
Right, right.
At the level of human being to human being. Now, that's important because, on the other hand, if I'm going to be on a panel show with other, which, you know, they're going to be taking shots and whatever, and carbon tax and, you climate alarmists and blah, blah. But as human beings, we have more in common than in the difference. And that's what I'm hoping, that Trump attacking us and saying we should be the 51st state might just be the moment where we stop beating up on what's wrong with Canada and start talking about what's right with Canada.
Well, and that's something that I wanted to touch on, because you've become quite popular in the last little while.
Really?
For some statements that you've made, basically telling certain politicians to pound sand. So I'd like you to talk about that a little bit. But also, when you're talking about the uniting of Canada, the ending of this divisiveness, because now we have one attacker, we'll say, coming after us.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts on how various provinces have been dealing with this? And should it be left to the feds? Should it be provincial? What do you think? I'm in Alberta, so that tells you where I'm coming from.
Well, I mean, Daniel Smith, it seems to be the premier for Kevin O'Leary. I think she should be ashamed. I mean, at the point that Doug Ford is looking like the progressive,
right?
Yes.
Right?
He's looking great.
What is happening?
Bizarre world.
He should be writing big checks to Daniel Smith, because we all met. Now, of course, I haven't met with the premiers, but we had a meeting right after Trump started. Well, he was talking about his tariffs the whole time, but we had him, as you know, famously covered in the media that Justin Trudeau invited all the party leaders and our chiefs of staff to meet privately to talk about what we could do as Team Canada. We were on board for that. And I'm on board for that. And I think that's the right way to go. We have to negotiate from strength. And if our premiers can be a solid front, because, you know, compared to the United States and the federal state balance in the U.S. versus the provincial Ottawa balance in Canada, the provinces in Canada have a lot more powers to execute than states in the U.S. do. So if we can be united from all the premiers, that's a plus in our negotiating position going forward with Donald Trump. As of January 20th, coming soon. It's still so hard to believe. It's still so hard to believe that he won the popular vote, but he won the popular vote. The U.S. is our largest trading partner. And when Trump says that we don't help do nothing, we don't do not, we help, never help with their military, never help defend them. I mean, do you guys, have you ever, like, does anyone ever brief Donald Trump on NORAD? It's shared responsibility. Canada, U.S., aerospace, looking after the, you know, there's
can
so many.
Can the briefing be acted out with finger puppets?
Well, yeah. Probably. I mean,
NORAD feels like a lot for him to parse, is all I'm saying.
I need to work on that. I wasn't kidding when I said one of the things I said in the press conference that didn't end up being, the part of the press conference that ended up going viral was the part other people spliced and did clever things with them, and that was great. But I said, look,
probably Christian Freeland's teenagers, probably.
I don't know. Thank you. Whoever did it, thank you, thank you, thank you. But, you know, it's not a throwaway line. Did you ever see Come From Away? Should we buy Donald Trump tickets to go see Come From Away? Not only were all those international flights directed to Canada, but the decision to shut down U.S. airspace was made by a Canadian who happened to be in charge of the mountain in NORAD. They had to make decisions fast. They did it Canada, U.S. together. It was shared, immediate action, not knowing what the hell was coming at them in the U.S. with the Twin Towers hit and hijacked planes and all of that. Within minutes, the FAA in the U.S. was instructed to ground all the domestic flights, and all the international flights are to come to Canada, and we'll deal. We'll take care of everybody. It was within seconds, within minutes, then it was a Canadian commander of NORAD that day, September 11th. Trump doesn't know any of this stuff because there's never been a major motion picture starring someone he likes.
Fair. That's fair. Fair. You're not wrong.
I know that. If we did a major motion picture starring Arnold Schwarzenegger explaining this with finger puppets, Trump wouldn't watch.
Yeah.
True. No. Out of curiosity, like, what do you think is behind this outsized role that the American media seems to be playing in Canadian politics right now? Like, you went viral on Fox News, which must have been a fascinating experience. And, like, the Trudeau going on Colbert. And now Mark Carney is, like, somehow redefined the liberal race with a jokey 20-minute interview. Like, what is going on with all of this American media overlap?
Liberals are really a party, not their whole race. They're not a whole race. But, no, sorry. Right. But greens, on the other hand, we are earthlings and we identify and grab it. But no, I don't know. U.S. politics has always been more interesting to Canadian media than Canadian politics to even Canadian media. So Canadian media doesn't take Canadian politicians nearly as seriously until they have made it by making some kind of impact in U.S. media.
Sure.
It's weird. It's part of, we don't like to call it, sometimes we call it the tall poppy syndrome. Mm. There's somebody in Canada is doing really, really well in a U.S. market. We like to slice them down. Or sometimes it's just called a national inferiority complex, but I don't understand it. Making it big on Colbert or The Daily Show, I don't know. I really miss Peter Zowski in Morningside because that used to be where you could hear Canadians talk to each other more. There's a lot we've lost in terms of being able to talk to each other in ways that informed. And that's, of course, that's all CBC. And Pierre Poilievre wants to defund CBC. I think we've got to refund CBC. Go back to having supper time news shows that across the country talk about local issues and talk about... Heck, I was talking to Pierre Lafontaine. I don't know if you remember, Pierre Lafontaine was the swim coach for the National Canadian Olympic swim team. And he told me that amateur sports in Canada had gone down after all the CBC supper time shows were canceled across the country because the local CBC affiliates used to cover local sports.
Right, right, of course.
So, I don't know. Putting more money into CBC to me makes a lot of sense. Eliminating all CBC advertising, especially for news programs on TV. Radio still supposedly advertising free, except for all the interruptions for CBC to advertise itself. But other than that, it's, I feel like I'm ranting about this. I don't know why the U.S. media is playing such a big role in Canadian politics right now, except that it's entertainment as opposed to journalism. And entertainment is much more clickbaitable than journalism.
That was sort of what I was wondering, was like watching the Mark Carney, John Stewart interview. I mean, yeah, it was friendly, but also like Stewart didn't always seem to have a real total handle on what was going on in Canada. No. And so do you think they're partly doing that because they're seeking interviews that are on really friendly footing that really aren't equipped to ask difficult questions?
Well, that certainly would be an option for Canadian politicians compared to a tough interview. But I actually think, I don't know any Canadian politician who wouldn't be happy to be given a tough interview as long as there's eyeballs on the channel. I mean, you want to know that you're connecting with Canadians, and I certainly do as leader of the Green Party. I love, you know, any opportunity to talk to Canadians about what we think is important, especially where you're allowed to get in more than a 30-second soundbite is awesome. So maybe that's why. I mean, how many opportunities are there for long candid interviews like what Mark Carney did with John Stewart? Where would you get that? Outside of a writ period. There are not a lot of shows like, obviously, this podcast is broken.
That's right.
Present company excluded.
People often call us the Daily Show of the North.
We don't have the budget, but you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, but you should. You really should. That's the Green Party platform. All the money should go to Podcast Broken.
You heard it here first, folks.
Finally.
Outstanding.
What's
pillar
their policy?
Of the platform.
Their policy is us.
No, this is a really great country in the sense that not capital G, like the U.S. is always extolling itself. We're a really wonderful country, and I love Canada. One of the things I really love about Canada is that people like to have conversations about what's happening locally, what's happening. You know, Canadian media stars, so to speak, are really very down to earth, normal people. And we don't really love manufactured celebrity of like the Kardashians or the people who are famous for being famous are not what we really like in Canada a lot. We like people who are, you know, maybe fun to listen to, but definitely down to earth and more willing to talk about things that matter. I think that's why Zowski was always such a hit. I used to love Peter Zowski reading letters out loud. For people who write thoughtful letters, you know? Mm. There's nothing that's replaced that since.
So let's do a quick little jump over from, I mean, the whole Donald Trump 51st state conversation is annoying. One of the things that really annoys me about it is the fact that it's not like we haven't had prior experience with this guy in a position of power in the states. We know his tactics. We know what he does. We know he says a bunch of garbage. And then he expects everyone to jump. And that's part of his negotiation tactic. It's like when Shannon and I bought a car and we had read somewhere, what you do is as soon as the guy says, I'm going to go talk to my manager, you leave and you get a better deal. And it's like, okay, great. So it's like, you know that. But as soon as everyone knows that tactic, it's a useless tactic. So I don't know why we've sort of jumped up to sort of, and that's all very, very annoying. But what's more pressing to me currently, apart from what's going to happen as far as the Liberal leadership situation unfolds, is this foreign interference report that's coming out at the end of the month. And I think there's a bunch of people who are, let's just say, not the biggest fans of Polyev and maybe not the biggest supporters of Polyev and are thinking to themselves, you know, in a fantasy, they're like, oh, this is it. This is going to take them down. It's not, though, is it? Nothing's going to take them down.
Well, I mean, one of the things that's weird, but there's a lot of things that are weird about the timing of the looming new federal election was that Madam Justice Hogue's report for January 31st was not supposed to be on the eve of an election. The thought was there's a fixed election date, October 20th. There's enough time between when her report has to be in for there to be legislative changes to the Elections Act if the Hogue Commission recommends changes to the Elections Act to reduce the risk of foreign interference. We do know that most of the foreign interference that happens in terms of federal electoral politics is within internal political party rules. The liberals have their rules, conservatives have their rules, Greens have their rules. But the part that's the big vulnerability of federal, of foreign powers, state actors in getting themselves into influencing Canadian elections, the weak spots are the nomination process for candidates. So very little effort for big reward if you manipulate a nomination process in a district where everybody knows this is a safe conservative riding. This is a safe liberal riding. You influence who becomes that nominee. You basically can own that MP in theory and not
necessarily.
And then the other big weakness is in leadership contests. So here we have public information, not secret information, that the leadership contest that Pierre Poilievre one has intelligence that suggests foreign interference from the government of India in that nomination process. That's public information because it was in the redacted version of the committee report. Right? It says we removed this paragraph because it deals with the allegations of foreign interference in the Conservative Party leadership race. And then you've got the first opportunity we've ever had as party leaders to ask for top secret security clearance was created by David Johnson in his ill-fated special rapporteur on the foreign interference allegations that all stemmed from whatever CSIS was leaking directly to Bob Fyfe so long ago now, but that's where this whole thing began to start unraveling. Well, to get the chance to get top secret security clearance, I said, yes, please. Can I do that? Because I want to be able to stay on top of whatever. So I got, but it's not easy. That's the thing that people may be missing. And that's why it strikes me as way bizarre that this isn't more in the news, that you have these two things that are known. One, there's an allegation of interference by the Modi government in the leadership race that Pierre Poilievre won. And then you have fact two, the only federal party opposition leader who doesn't want to ask for top secret security clearance is the one where there's an allegation of foreign interference in the leadership race he won. You know, in his shoes, I would race to get to go to the.
Yes.
If it takes a while to get, right? And you may not get it. If they think you're compromised, you're not going to get top secret security clearance.
Which is part of the deal, though. I mean, that's the whole thing, right? Is it, I mean, it's sure, it shouldn't be too easy to get. But at the same time, probably most people, regular Joes, could probably get it to an extent, provided they weren't easily compromisable. But that's the part that makes my head spin a little bit, is the fact that you've got this allegation of foreign interference in the conservative leadership race, which makes me think, well, if Poilievre doesn't want to find out doesn't want to get security clearance to find out the information, is he somehow involved? These are all things, speculative things that come in your head. Is he somehow involved?
It's not that speculative, right?
Right. Like, and then, but then to further that though, you've got the liberal leadership thing happening. They're at their most vulnerable for compromise. And surely if you were Poilievre, you'd be like, I want to know everything I can possibly know so that I can deal with this appropriately. Mm-hmm. And this whole notion that people have, and Shannon and I were talking about this earlier, saying how, you know, which we've talked about briefly before, is people argue that, well, if he gets a security clearance, he's not going to be able to criticize the government. There's an NDA. This is literally was read tonight online. There's an NDA he has to sign that says he has to, if he sees any corruption, he's not allowed to talk about it.
That's not true.
Well, of course it's not true.
But I mean, I didn't stop talking when I got my top secret security. I held the longest press conferences ever held in the
history. You'd kill on the Daily Show, by the way. You'd kill on the Daily Show.
Ever. Yeah. Because they kept asking questions and I had to navigate in my head. What I can't do is break the law.
Sure.
And when you have top secret security clearance, it means you get to read things that are covered by what we used to call the Official Secrets Act. It's not called that anymore, but you know, and I had people from the kind of the spy agency folks of Canada explain to me clearly, if you were to, because I double checked everything I said before I said it. I said, look,
sure.
If I were to say X, having read the documents, and I said there's this thing that I concluded from that. Is that a problem? Yeah, actually, because if you said that, foreign powers that are watching what we're saying, they would know there's no way we knew that except if person Y, wherever, in whatever country, is in fact an intelligence asset of ours, a spy. So they basically made it pretty clear to me that if I was careless in what I said, someone could get killed. Now, that does make you careful, you know, unless you've picked the person you want to get killed in advance. You're
pretty sure. Is there a list? Can we add to the
I mean, the Green Party is known for its sniper team.
Right?
Well, yeah. We didn't want that to get out too soon. But yeah, so it's not the insects we want to eat. There's the Soylent Green thing. But no, never mind. I want to be careful when I talk about what I've read in the top secret security document. Doesn't mean I can't talk about it. Mm-hmm. And for Pierre Poilievre, I mean, and backed up by Tom Mulcair, God help us. What are they thinking? If you have access to top secret security information, and there's a lot of, at the point that I got my secret status to be able to read all this stuff, there was widespread speculation that there were a bunch of traitors currently serving in parliament who were already very compromised and who were already doing the bidding of foreign governments and therefore were, by definition, traitors. I didn't, when I went in to go read all the documents that I read, I didn't know that that wasn't true. I was really relieved to be able to show Canadians that's not true. Mm. Now, what is Pierre Poilievre talking about? Of course you're allowed to talk. You're just not allowed to blab stupidly. Mm. Now, maybe that's a problem. Oh, well.
there's strike one right there.
That could be our new slogan. We keep trying to figure out what's our slogan instead of axe the tax man. Don't blab stupidly.
Don't blab stupid. Don't blab, comma, stupid.
Yeah. So just a question. When you're saying, like, you know, if things are said and then other foreign entities pick up on this, that. So what does Michelle Rempel-Garner's run out of a room say to foreign people, just, hey, had to go good get things. A coffee? Like,
I don't think that was so much about foreign state actors as people in other political parties and what is it she knows and what does she not want to have to answer questions about. Gotcha.
Right,
I mean, I got to give credit to Michelle Rempel-Garner. She signed up to be Patrick Brown's campaign manager when everybody who wanted to be on the right side of what they thought would be the winning candidate signed up with Pierre Poilievre. I got to give a lot of credit to Gerard Deltel. He's still in, and this is unusual because most of the people that Pierre Poilievre didn't have in his camp have been thrown beyond the, you know, exile, beyond the fifth ring of Saturn. They don't get anywhere near him. So Ed Fast, for example, as soon as Ed Fast, who after all was Stephen Harper's trade minister, Ed is hardly a lefty, but Ed Fast, when Pierre Poilievre said Bitcoin's going to protect us from inflation and said we should fire the governor of the Bank of Canada, Ed Fast said, a serious person doesn't say this kind of thing. You want to be prime minister, this is not the kind of thing you say because it's simply not said. It shows a vast level of ignorance, which is unfortunate in a candidate for Conservative Party leadership who could potentially be a prime minister. So the fact that Michelle had stuck it out, was campaigning for Patrick Brown, left that position, and maybe because of foreign interference is the question. How much benefit did Pierre Poilievre get, if any, from foreign interference? And the only answer we're getting from the Conservatives is he would have won anyway. He won by a lot. That doesn't answer the question. I mean,
it does in its own way.
I mean, the first time I ever heard of foreign interference in a Canadian leadership race, which is so long ago that and it didn't resurface till I started reminding people that Karl-Heinz Schreiber of the Airbus scandal, Karl-Heinz Schreiber brought European money, I think in envelopes, but anyway, right-wing European interests wanted to remove Joe Clark and put Brian Mulroney in as head of the Progressive Conservative Party. That's the thing that happened. Karlheinz Schreiber brought the money that helped bring right-wing Quebec conservatives into Ottawa for a convention to outflank Joe Clark. That happened. We never fixed the leadership contest rules to remove foreign interference. We know very well from a lot of evidence that that Prime Minister Modi of India really hates Justin Trudeau. So he may have really wanted to see a conservative win to replace Trudeau. That's all plausible. Would he have wanted to get involved in the Conservative Party leadership race because he liked Pierre Poilievre a lot better and his chances with Pierre Poilievre better than he liked his chances with Jean Charest or Patrick Brown? Who knows? That's all speculation at this point because we don't know. The only thing that creates the really large question, which I think people should be asking Pierre Poilievre more forcefully, why don't you ask for your top secret security clearance? Because when you don't ask and you give these bogus non-answer excuses, it creates the question mark. Mm-hmm. Are you not asking, Mr. Poilievre, because you're afraid that the degree to which you are indebted to a foreign power might lose you votes if people knew? And the degree to which you might be indebted to a foreign power, does that mean you think you couldn't get top secret security clearance? It's a conversation Canadian, we need to have.
Yeah, as a Canadian, it's concerning to me because I think, you know, the polls, the way they are currently, it sort of seems like that's where it's headed. He's going to be prime minister. I still have hope that he's not going to be.
No, it's not going to.
What's that? Sorry?
No.
No. You don't think so?
No. Well, oh, I think I it's like a this. Risk. I think there's a chance, but it's not a foregone conclusion.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's good. Dude, see, I feel better already. That's
don't
good.
Count Elizabeth out. She's I'm not. Still on the board, <I'm not>. Man.
I've been disappointed before Elon Musk says I'm not governor. But, you know, nobody has declared I'm not prime minister.
That's right. Well, there you go.
That's right.
The exactly. confidence vote may pass. You just never know.
Sorry, go ahead.
Just saying, I don't think I'm likely to be prime minister. I would say I'll put my record up against any of the other guys in terms of experience and
sure.
and yeah. and knowledge base and ability to work well with others, that kind of stuff should count for something. But in the meantime, I want Pierre Poilievre to clear the air on this because yeah. we do not want anyone who becomes Prime Minister of Canada to be beholden to a foreign state actor, period. Regardless of, you know, and we generally have the issue of, which we don't talk about, how beholden have many prime ministers before us been beholden to the United States.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. But we've I think are now more aware of deliberate efforts by foreign state actors to implicate themselves, to play a role in our politics in a way we weren't really paying attention to before this issue has arisen in the last year and then the last, particularly in the last 3-4 months. And for Poilievre to think, to continue to say, I'm not going to ask for top secret security clearance because I won't be allowed to talk anymore. At what point do Canadians say, that's just so ridiculous? Mm-hmm. That's obviously not the case. Jagmeet Singh has his top secret security clearance. We still hear from him. Elizabeth May had her top secret security clearance. Why, Mr. Poilievre, do you think this applies to you and uniquely you when you're the only party leader where there's, and again, intelligence isn't evidence. So having intelligence from sources around the world where we're, you know, we have our ear to the ground and we're listening in on other people's conversations in other countries, and that's where we get intelligence. Intelligence isn't the same as evidence. But once there's a story that's not just a story, but shared as public information from the all-party parliamentary committee on foreign interference and national security, and in the public version of their report, they say their concerns about the Conservative Party leadership race and foreign interference, and the person who won that race is the only leader who is not asked if he can get top secret security clearance. If he gets it, that's like, as far as I'm concerned, that's like a seal of approval from CSIS and security operatives that they've gone over his record and gone over his background the way they had to go through mine and decide there's no compromising elements here. I mean, they ask about private stuff, public stuff,
sure,
foreign state actors. They ask about everything because they want to know, are you going to be in any way compromised if you have information that's important for this country's national security? Is there any way in which someone has a hold on you to get that information? At a minimum, Pierre Poilievre should get that question out of the way before the writ drops. And it looks to me like he has no intention of doing so.
It's all awful. It's just, it sounds so suspect. And it's exactly as you said, like the longer he doesn't do it, the more suspicion it raises. And it just seems more clear and clear and clear. There's a reason he's not doing it. He's intentionally not doing it. But
you know,
I will say that, you know, you have been, Elizabeth, an oasis of sanity in this gameplay and nonsense that's happening. I don't know if that says good things about us that we're having you as an oasis of sanity, but it's good. It's good. Yeah. We appreciate it, though. We greatly appreciate it.
I also hope, more than sanity, I really hope to be an oasis of kindness, because I love these guys. I really do. I don't understand why we are allowing ourselves as a society to become nastier. I am pleading with, obviously, Pierre Poilievre picked Jenny Byrne to be the person who runs the show for him in the Conservative Party. Pay attention, Canadians, to where Jenny Byrne just took Erin O'Toole out to the woodshed because what? He said something nice about someone who'd resigned. That's what we do as Canadians. And I don't think we need to have, you know, spin doctors and, you know, people running the war room for political parties going to an election who think it's like fraternizing with the enemy to be known to achieve cross-party success, to work well across party lines. I bet anything, 90% plus of Canadians like it when they see that a conservative and a liberal or an NDP or a green work together. We had that lovely little committee. It got covered by Adrian Arsenault and the National, where a bunch of us decided to try to rescue as many former members of parliament, women, Afghan women MPs whose lives were in danger. And a bunch of us tried to figure out how are we going to rescue those. It was completely on our own, but you know, liberals, Marcus Pulaski and Leah Taylor Roy and NDPer Heather McPherson and Bloc Québécois, Alexis Brunel Duceppe and conservative Alex Ruff. And God bless conservative Alex Ruff, because I mean, this guy, he did tours of duty in Afghanistan. He's ex-military. He's the member of parliament for Bruce Gray Owen Sound. We all as a group worked together. I talked to all of them. Since that CBC story aired, all of us have received nothing but lovely messages from our constituents and others across the country saying, it gave me faith and it really made me feel good about being Canadian. It made me so happy to see that MPs in different parties could actually work together. Wow, that was great. Nobody wrote us and said, you vile pig, you've tried to rescue women Afghan MPs and you were willing to work with those stinking, rotten, whatever. But that's Jenny Byrne's playbook.
Yeah.
Jenny Byrne's playbook is to turn people against, as if they're the enemy, another party. That's so wrong. And that's what, now Pierre Poilievre can choose, you know, what he wants to do as an election strategy. But that one is bad for the country. So we have to be able to say, well, if you're wanting to see Canada remain the kind of country that still celebrates the notion that you can disagree without being disagreeable, then we ought to be paying a lot more attention to stopping the use of algorithms and rage farming and disinformation and shut it all down and focus on policy differences. You know, it's one of those old Green Party getting together and beating around issues is tough on issues, but not tough on each other, not tough on people. How do you do that in an election campaign when the world has gone so nuts that you've got Donald Trump soon 5 days away from being president of the United States again, despite being convicted. Forget being a convicted, you know, felon, a convicted sex offender.
Yeah.
And he's got the right-wing Christian vote in the U.S. As a practicing Christian myself, I'm wondering, how the heck did this guy, who seemed bound and determined to break every single one of the Ten Commandments, how did he become the favorite of the Christian voter in the United States? Oh, well, that's one of those questions I ask myself. Sometimes I pray on it. But, you know, Jesus Christ, literally, hey.
I often, you know, when I was growing up, I was right into UFOs and reading about UFOs and stuff and aliens and all that kind of stuff. And one of the things I sort of held close to me was the idea that, you know, there was so much strife in the world. There was so much anger and animosity and acrimony. And I thought, you know, as soon as aliens arrive on the planet, we'll all get together and we'll all be like, okay, now we know who we are compared to who they are. And I'm not saying they're friendly or not. I think that Donald Trump might be our alien. I think he's made Canada realize, okay, wait a minute. That's my hope. Anyway, that's the hope
I can't believe, you know, I used to think the same thing when I was a little kid. Yeah. I don't know how many little kids thought that. Are we just weird in our own way? I don't know. But we are special.
We were young when Close Encounters of the Third Kind came out.
I wasn't born.
At this point, I'm just ready for the aliens to come and take us. Like, let's start over. Let's just start over somewhere else.
By the way, when they were cross-questioning me for my top secret security clearance, and they said, is there anything that you would be more loyal to than Canada? Is there any other allegiance or affiliation you have? And I think I did worry them because I said yes. And they... I said, yeah, there's nothing that I'm as loyal to as Canada. I'll give my life for Canada any day of the week. But my larger affiliation is I am an Earthling.
Yeah. So
you heard it here first, aliens. Elizabeth May will not sell us out.
That's right. Nice exactly. Try. Earth is not for sale.
Yeah, no, I was
rock solid.
I still got my top secret security clearance, even though I outed myself as being more loyal to planet and country.
Your pro-Earth position slipped past them somehow, and we're glad for it.
All right, we're going to finish off with a game of word association. This is for Elizabeth, Lisa, and Steve.
Oh.
I'll be reading off the words. You guys will be saying the first word that comes to mind. We'll start with Elizabeth and go to Lisa, then to Steve in that order. Here, are you guys ready to go?
Mm-hmm.
This is word association. First word that comes to mind, Trump. That's an answer.
That really is.
Elizabeth stole mine. It was like, ugh.
I'm just buffoon is what flies into my head.
Okay, that's good.
I was impressed the other night on CBC, the national one. Andrew Coyne actually said insane. Mm. For somebody who's the right winger on the panel, which I would say the attitude panel is the full range of right wing opinion in Canada, but for Andrew Coyne to be the one who says Donald Trump is, let's face it, insane. Mm. He's scary. He's scary. Yeah. No.
Mm-hmm.
Andrew Coyne's coming around. He's gonna
any day now.
Another 10 years and we got him. Yeah.
Next word, Polyev.
Who's that one for?
All three of you.
You're first.
You can bat lead
off. Elizabeth first.
Skippy. That was his nickname. He used to love it. Now he doesn't like it so much. No? I figure it's because in the old days, Skippy peanut butter was smooth, but it got really crunchy when they added all those nuts.
No. Oh, God.
Canada's queen of zing.
Oh, yeah. manipulative comes to mind when I hear
twerp. He is a twerp.
Mm. Yeah.
That was his nickname too.
Twerpy.
Get back here, twerp.
Next up, again, it's going to be Elizabeth, Lisa, and then Steve.
Okay.
Winter.
Love it. Oh, snow disappearing, global warming, killing it. But anyway, winter. I love winter.
That went dark real fast.
Sorry.
It's Lisa? One word. One word, Elizabeth.
Her mind's so active. She's got so many thoughts. They're just coming at her.
You said winter and I fall came into my head.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, okay. I know, right? I go backwards.
Okay, Steve.
Over soon?
Oh, I like
one word.
I said it real fast. That. I said it fast.
Last two. Here we go. Elizabeth, Lisa, and Steve. Mar-a-Lago.
Underwater.
Hepatitis.
Shitty wedding. Every time I see photos of Mar-a-Lago, it just looks like a shitty wedding. But well, also, did you see the burger that Kevin O'Leary posted?
No.
Almost as big as him.
So it was like, make burgers wonderful again, again. And it had like Trump and his face like branded on the top of the burger, but it wasn't branded right. So it said rump. But also it was like the driest, foulest burger I've ever seen.
Rump. Tasty. Okay. My favorite of the Mar-a-Lago stories, we talked about this before, was when Trudeau was down there having dinner and trying to do his best to suck up. And they had to stop eating and stand for the national anthem twice, just randomly. Good
then
Lord.
Then they played like Village People a few times.
Yeah, like a scene at a cabaret.
It wasn't for O Canada.
No, it wasn't for O Canada, exactly. No.
Well, that's why I think Shitty Wedding, because they play Village People like all the time now.
I'm so disappointed the Village People are playing the inauguration.
Yeah,
because the lead singer dude, the Village People, who got all the money, was initially very anti-Trump, and then I think he made enough money, he became very pro-Trump.
Funny thing about money.
Yeah. Last one.
Let's make... Okay, you got another one going.
No, go ahead. Go ahead, go ahead.
No, I just think we have to make the greed really gross to the point that people say, ick, I don't want anything to do with that guy. He's a billionaire. Oh, disgusting.
Yeah.
But that's... We have to... be the ones. So for the people that are performing at the inauguration, then we have to then impact their money. You know what I mean? Like it has to.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah. So if you need a dance to gesture to at a wedding, just instead of like YMCA, just do Hot to Go instead. From
Exactly.
There you go.
It'll be fun. Yeah. Last one. Here we go. Word association. Elizabeth, Lisa, then Steve. 51st state.
Washington, D.C. They don't have the right to vote there.
No.
Oh, there you go. You're smart. I broke my own rule. It's a two-worder. It's fuck off.
Oh, I know. Oh, nice. I like that. It was strong words, but well felt. Yeah.
No.
I like it.
No.
Trump doesn't understand the word no.
I just, all I can think of is like, There's a lot of young kids are very raised, like very manner focused these days in funny sort of ways. And so they'll just say, no, thank you. No, thank you. No, thank you. Like all the time. And that's all that I can think of is just no, thank you. No, thank you.
No, I just want 11th province.
Yeah, I know. It was a good idea. That was a good idea. Well, listen, Elizabeth, thank you so much for joining us on our first episode back into 2025. And, as I said earlier, that you are an oasis of sanity in all this political gaming and nonsense that's happening. And it's an absolute honor and a treat to have you come on and chat with us idiots and give us some insight. Plus, you've got your national security clearance. So
yeah, I can now spill all the beans and be shot later.
Although I feel like that status may be under threat after doing this podcast. Who's to say?
Yeah, you never know.
Thank you so much for bringing what you bring into Canada's life as a like podcast team and Stuart, your brittle star moments for, I know it's Twitter and tweet and all this stuff. That's where I usually see it. But I mean, and you got fans, man. Thank you so much.
Thank you. I appreciate that. We greatly appreciate that. Now that you've said lovely things about us, this is where I drop the big thing at the end is the end of each episode, we do an improvised theme song. Are you willing to be part of this improvised theme song?
Sure.
Fantastic.
What is it?
We make it up every time. If anyone has any instruments, I'll be playing.
Got some Xbox controllers I can clank together.
That's good. Yeah,
I have candy canes that I'm going to.
I've got a TV remote.
This is why we should have done it when my husband was here, because he plays the guitar and sings, but he's not home.
Oh, no. Real this skill is not.
Serious.
Not
no.
No, exactly.
Part of the
we
equation.
We don't need that kind of leveling up. We have to keep the bar down here, just out of frame.
I'm using candy canes, Elizabeth.
Yeah. Yeah, really talent.
I've got this. I can use this for a drum.
You can find past episodes and more at podcastisbroken.ca or your favorite podcast platform.